Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
The CDC reports that cases of measles nationwide have grown to over 700, and it's the worst outbreak in decades. New York's Rockland County has over 200 of those cases, and New York State legislators are calling for immediate passage of a bill to mandate vaccinations unless a person has a medical exemption. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The lawmakers say the current law, which allows a child to skip vaccinations because of religious reasons, is creating too big a loophole and leading to what they say is a growing health crisis. Rockland County Executive Ed Day tried unsuccessfully to declare a state of emergency in his county. Day says the bill is a godsend.
To wait is a recipe for medical disaster. I can't make it more clear than that.
The outbreak began in the county last October after seven infected travelers from Israel visited New York's ultra-Orthodox Jewish communities and the illness spread. Day was at the state capitol along with the Assembly and Senate sponsors of a bill that requires all children to be immunized against measles and other diseases unless they have a medical exemption. Bronx Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz blames the outbreak on the anti-vaccination movement, which he says has been discredited by scientific research. He says vaccinations have saved millions of lives.
Measles can kill. Measles can cause permanent harm, blindness, deafness, brain damage. It's unbelievable that in this day and age, in the 21st century, there are people out there who are spreading lies, who are spreading misinformation about vaccinations.
Dinowitz says no major religion has a policy against vaccinations. He believes people are citing the religious exemption when their opposition actually stems from personal reasons.
In New York State, the religious exemption is a de facto personal belief exemption, meaning there are many people who are claiming the religious exemption when in fact it has nothing to do with religion.
Governor Andrew Cuomo has also voiced objections to the bill, although not on scientific grounds, saying there might be First Amendment issues involved. The bill's sponsors say they are talking to Cuomo about his reservations. Cuomo, speaking on Long Island Monday, revised his view, saying he now backs an end to religious exemptions for vaccinations in this particular outbreak.
And I don't think in this case the religious exemption is appropriate.
But he did not say whether he supports the bill. Cuomo says health officials in his administration are working with Rockland County and New York City to address what he says is a public health emergency. Supporters of the measure say they don't know if there are enough votes in the legislature to pass the bill into law, but they say they hope to garner enough support to have a law by summer. Senator James Skoufis, who represents portions of Rockland County, says if that doesn't happen, things could get much worse.
In a couple of months, everyone's on summer vacation, everyone's on summer break, and we're going to have infected children, infected families traveling all around this state, all around this country, infecting other New Yorkers and Americans. We have to act now.
In the meantime, the Senate has begun a public awareness campaign about the importance of vaccinations. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Included in this year's state budget, New York State will ban single-use plastic bags in 2020. But some communities are taking steps to address another kind of plastic pollution. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard with more.
Schenectady City Councilor Karen Zaluski-Wildzunas wants to ban plastic straws.
They don't biodegrade. They don't go through the recyclers. If you find anything on the street, it always seems to be a straw from a litter standpoint.
Zaluski-Wildzunas and fellow Democratic City Councilor John Palomini are proposing legislation that would ban plastic straws in the city. She says several businesses have already moved to paper, bamboo, or metal straws. The councilors plan to introduce the legislation at the next city council committee meeting on Monday, May 6th. Democratic Mayor Gary McCarthy said he's interested in seeing the legislation.
It's a step in the right direction. I think it's a small thing that people can grasp. So look forward to seeing what the council has in their actual legislation and then using it as a platform to message just going forward.
Saluski Wildzunis says banning one type of plastic waste is a start.
I haven't talked to the rest of the council about this, but John Palomini and I had a one-off conversation about, you know, the straws are a good start, but we need to go further than that.
The move to limit or ban types of single-use plastics is catching on in more places in order to keep trash out of landfills and the ocean. On Tuesday, Maine became the first state to ban single-use plastic foam food and drink containers. A student at the University at Albany is pushing the university to ban plastic straws on campus. Grace McGrath, a 19-year-old student with senior standing, introduced a proposal that was passed by the legislative bodies of both the Student Association and Graduate Student Association. The move would still need to be approved by the college administration, and McGrath knows that it may not be a complete ban. She says certain outside vendors on campus, like Starbucks, have their own straw policies.
I think plastic straws aren't going to be completely banned. I would love if that was the case. But understandably, we have to work with the different communities on campus. And some communities are like, we want some plastic straws. So it will be a lot less plastic straws.
The campus does have a recent history of cutting down on single-use plastics, taking steps to limit bottled water sales. For McGrath, the straw solution is a first step. She says she wants to see a plastic-free world and hopes to spread the word this summer.
So I'm going to try to build up a coalition throughout the state and just get people informed about it and tell them why it's important that we should start moving away from plastic. So hopefully I can get the attention of the governor and any senators and legislators.
McGrath's straw legislation would still need to be passed by UAlbany's University Auxiliary Services Board, which will meet next on May 10th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, the senator from Rockland County sat in the studio with us. That's James Skoufis. And you and he had quite a discussion about the bill that's been introduced in the legislature to stop the religious exemptions for vaccinations. And he was not hearing that side of it, the idea that you wouldn't get a vaccination.
Well, look, Skoufis is a good man. He's got a lot of guts. He ran in the Rockland County District, and Curious Joel is part of it. And we do know that there have been some bad things said about him by some of the religious leaders. But he stood by his guns, and amazingly, he won. A lot of politicians are scared to death of organized religious groups where, you know, one person is at the head and they said, this is what we're going to do. And that is certainly the case in Rockland County, although Skoufis says that not everybody is on that ticket. And a lot of the Orthodox Jewish people, for example, have been vaccinated. So that you can't stereotype by saying everybody is on one side. Nevertheless, the man has a lot of guts.
Including being chair of the Investigations Committee, and referencing this issue of pre-audits.
That's right. Nothing has bothered me so much as when the governor and the legislature took away Tom DiNapoli's pre-audit function in many cases. They have now, as he said, given it up because it was a lousy idea to take that away. When you're accumulating power, you try to diminish the power of other people. But the state constitution gives a role to the comptroller. We know why he's there or she's there. They are there because they are keeping an eye on how we expend things. Look, we do know that some of the people around the governor, it's unfortunate, and he says it's one of the most painful things in his life, really began to steal. And we don't know if it's absolutely so, but we suspect it couldn't hurt like chicken soup if the comptroller was able to take a look at the way in which some of these contracts were being dispersed, which have led to convictions. And it is clear that a big mistake was made here. And I can understand where the governor was coming from, but I can't get why the legislature, after all, Tom DiNapoli comes from the legislature, they knew better. But they towed the line, they took away that power, and now basically they've given much of it back.
You also talked with Senator Skoufis about the marijuana legislation that was thought to be fast-tracked in the budget, then stalled. Governor told you about how it's a complicated matter. Skoufis reiterated that, but said it looks like they're making progress and something will be done.
Yes. Well, Skoufis agreed with the governor that it shouldn't have been in the budget because it was too complicated. It's really not that complicated. Massachusetts did it easily. And, you know, the idea that somehow the politics of the situation where people really want something for themselves politically has gotten in the way. So it could have been done. It could have been done in the budget like so many other things were done, which could have been separate bills but weren't done in the budget. That could have been done there, too. So I don't think the governor was right in that, and I don't think Skoufis was right in that. You know, I think they could have gotten it done.
And what about congestion pricing? Skoufis said we're not going to be double tolled.
Well, he makes a point. I mean, something like $15 to come over the George Washington Bridge now. And then if you get into the congestion zone, double that. And I think everybody realizes that $30 to come into the city, over $30, is ridiculous. If you're from out of there, the congestion pricing is a good idea. I'm all for it. And if you want to charge tolls on the bridge, that's okay too, but not both. That really makes it impossible. And believe me, there will be plenty of very wealthy people who will think nothing of spending that $30.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State and local lawmakers held a rally this week outside Trump National Golf Club in Westchester County. They were promoting a state bill that would change how private golf courses are assessed. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
Trump National Golf Club is in Briarcliff Manor in the town of Ossining. Village of Ossining trustee Omar Herrera says he's been fielding comments about the proposed legislation, such as
divisive and against the president. It's not about the president. It just happens to be that he, a couple years ago, asked for a 90% decrease in his taxes.
Democrat Tom Abinanti is assembly co-sponsor.
I mean, there are people out there who are already calling my office. What's the matter? You're against rich people? You're trying to make the community unaffordable for the normal middle-class person?
I love golf courses, even though I don't personally play. But I want them to pay their fair share. That's just the bottom line. And I don't think we should stop shouting until they pay their fair share. Thank you.
That's Democrat Sandy Galef, who is sponsoring the bill in the Assembly that would allow for an assessing unit, in this case the town of Ossining, to provide that for the assessment of private golf courses, the assessed valuation shall be based upon the property's highest and best use.
The problem has really generated from this community, and I think it's because the only two golf courses in the town of Ossining are in court now. So the fact that each golf course is asking for such a lowering of their assessed valuation of their property, it's just brought this to the attention of everyone.
Democrat David Carlucci is the lead sponsor in the Senate.
And as you've heard, we have to close this loophole. Enough is enough. We cannot be subsidizing the recreation of some of the richest people in America on the backs of school children.
Again, Westchester Assemblyman Abinanti.
First of all, this is not about Donald Trump. This is about fair taxes.
A recent study lists Westchester as number one nationally with the highest property taxes.
To say that this entire golf course, 100 and something acres, is paying only somewhere like $100,000 or less. That's $1,000 an acre. Well, any one of these little homes on this block with their maybe 1 acre is paying $40,000. That's just makes a mockery of the whole system.
A Trump National Golf Club spokesperson did not respond to a request for comment in time for this broadcast. Galef, who says there is a golf course in every community in her district, says she introduced the bill last year and faced a lot of backlash.
But I think there's a better chance. I do think there's a better chance now.
I would agree, because I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to educate the public and educate lawmakers about what this legislation is and what it's not. And there's been a lot of interpretation about our legislation that just is not real. The bottom line is this is up to every local municipality to opt into it. As Assemblywoman Galef had said, that municipalities are going to have to do a public hearing in order to adopt this new regulation that would give assessors another tool. And that's all we're asking for.
Town of Ossining Supervisor Dana Levenberg.
We cannot stand by idly while our president inflates the value of his property when it suits him, but deflates it when it comes to paying taxes.
Again, Gala.
I mean, Sleepy Hollow wasn't in the paper saying this is how much the value of Sleepy Hollow is, but certainly with the Trump National, that it was in the paper saying this is worth $50 million. So that's kind of what triggered this, too, when it's announced that there's a certain value, and then you're saying, but I'm in court, and I'm saying in court it's only worth $1.5 million. So real discrepancy.
Carlucci believes the court's interpretation of tax law has been unfairly assessing private golf courses as if they were municipal courses.
It's happened over the past 20 years where cases have been upheld over and over again, not in our favor. It's only getting worse and worse. And now the courses are learning this. They have the right attorneys. They're filing the certiorarys whenever they can. And we think it's only going to continue to grow. And that's why this specific industry has to be focused in on.
Galef, who chairs the Assembly Committee on Real Property Taxation, hopes that such legislation would keep private golf club owners from going to court in the first place.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Well, the New York Yankees and the Philadelphia Flyers have both stopped playing Kate Smith's version of God Bless America following renewed attention on other songs the 20th Century Titan recorded that contain racist lyrics. Smith is buried in Lake Placid, New York, and that community is stunned to hear the allegations. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
The Philadelphia Flyers removed a statue of the late singer Kate Smith outside the NHL team's arena Sunday and also removed their recording of Kate Smith's God Bless America from their music library. The New York Yankees have also stopped using the song during the seventh inning stretch. The teams took the actions after, according to the New York Times, a single email to the Yankees pointed out racism in other Smith songs. The song, That's Why Darkies Were Born, recorded in 1939, had originally closed out the first act of the musical George White's Scandals, which played at the Apollo Theater in 1931 and 1932. The song was intended to be satire. It was also recorded by Paul Robeson. Kate Smith died in 1986 and is buried in Lake Placid. She had a summer residence there for over 30 years. Mayor Craig Randall says she was well known and frequently seen in the village.
I remember Kate. Having grown up here, I frequently saw her on the streets in Lake Placid when she was here. She used to operate or conducted a radio station program from her summer home here on Lake Placid Lake. And she used to befriend an elderly lady who needed help. And I think Kate looked in on her and looked after her some whenever she was here.
Randall notes that the songs in question were recorded more than 80 years ago.
I think it's taken out of context. There's a vast difference between the 1930s. In 2019, in terms of where our society is, these type of issues, and that's all understandable. But we're seeing this in other aspects of historical events in our country where it almost seems like they're trying to wipe out any reference to those events that are part of our history.
Lake Placid Hall of Fame Chairman Sandy Calgiore says the group plans to do absolutely nothing in response to the sports team's removal of Smith.
We take a look at the entire body of Kate Smith and what she meant to Lake Placid. She was very generous to St. Agnes Church, the local hospital, the Eline Assisted Living Center. She supported youth programs. And I think, and the committee thinks, that it would be very callous of us to turn our backs on somebody that was such a big part of the fabric of Lake Placid, given all that she's done for this community.
Lake Placid is in the town of North Elba. Supervisor Roby Politi says you won't find anyone in the village who would have a bad word about Kate Smith. He remembers her as a wonderful, unassuming, and nice person.
This is very unfortunate, malicious, unfounded. Why would we listen to the Yankees or the Flyers? They don't know what they're talking about. She was a real patriot. It's easy to pick on somebody who's dead and gone.
Politi also has a suggestion for the Philadelphia Flyers.
I hope the Flyers give us the statue. We'll gladly take Kate's statue.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. According to the American Lung Association, more than 140 million people are breathing unhealthy air, 7 million more than last year. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The American Lung Association has released its annual air quality report.
The American Lung Association looks at air pollution monitoring data nationwide and translates that into grades and rankings to help make it easier for everyone to understand about the air quality in the cities and counties where they live.
Janice Nolan is ALA's Assistant Vice President for National Policy. She headed the team that produced the 2018 State of the Air report.
As we have done since the first report in 2000, we look at 3 years of data using data from local, state, tribal, and federal monitors across the nation. In this report, we look again at two types of air pollution, ozone, often called smog, and particle pollution, often called soot.
Michael Sealback is Vice President, Public Policy and Communications for the ALA Northeast Region.
We saw over 96% of Connecticut residents living in areas with failing air quality. In New York, we saw almost 50% of the population living in counties with failing air quality. This year's report had some good news. Vermont, for example, and Massachusetts saw their air quality improve almost across the board, and Burlington was one of only a few cities that was on the cleanest cities list for all the air pollutants we measure.
The 19th annual State of the Air report is not a good one for the Empire State. It found that 9.4 million New Yorkers are breathing unhealthy air. 16 of the 27 reporting counties saw failing grades, and metro areas throughout the state experienced a greater amount of unhealthy air days due to ozone, part of a national trend. On the bright side, the metro areas around Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo were all found to rank among the cleanest cities for short-term particle pollution. Jeff Seiler is the ALA's chief division officer.
Despite the improvements we've seen in air quality since we started compiling this report 19 years ago, unhealthy levels of air pollution still exist throughout the country and right here in New York. State of the Air 2018 is based on data reported from 2014 to 2016 and found that air pollution worsened compared to last year's report, specifically ozone pollution. Nearly 4 in 10 people in the United States, more than 133.9 million Americans, live in counties where they are exposed to unhealthy levels of air pollution in the form of either ozone or particle pollution. This year's State of the Air report showed that despite the recent increase in ozone pollution, the Clean Air Act has worked to clean up much of the dangerous air pollution across the nation for decades. The air is cleaner, but not clean enough to protect people's health from harm. And climate change will continue to make both ozone pollution and particle pollution harder to clean up.
Nolan says weakening the Clean Air Act tops the list of 6 threats identified in this year's report.
The second threat is repealing plans to reduce carbon pollution from power plants. Unfortunately, last year, the EPA administrator proposed to repeal the Clean Power Plan, the only nationwide strategic approach to cutting carbon pollution from the largest industrial-scale source of carbon pollution in the United States, power plants. The third threat is removing limits on emissions from oil and gas operations. Threat number four, opening doors for more polluting trucks and cars. In 2017, EPA proposed to create a loophole allowing the sale of much dirtier heavy-duty diesel trucks, despite broad opposition from the rest of the trucking industry. And earlier this month, the administrator proposed that EPA and the Department of Transportation would propose new rules to weaken adopted standard for greenhouse gas emission reductions from cars, from personal trucks, and SUVs. Threat number five, cutting funding and expertise to clean up the air.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1918. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.